The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Wow, the horrors of war. That was a clip of a movie about World War I. I'm Dwight Falk. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Program. I'm filling in for Stephen Fleury today. And that clip that we just saw is a scene from the movie adaptation of the book All Quiet on the Western Front. That's a book that we're reading here in the sophomore literature class at Armstrong College. And we're having a lot of great discussion about war, about human nature, you know, about the things that people went through in battles like that. Those movie clips, you know, they give us some sense of like what it might have been like to be a soldier in World War I, to see a tank for the first time, to see this type of destruction. Horrifying. That book, All Quiet on the Western Front, was written by Eric Remarque. Now, he was a Frenchman, but during World War I, he was conscripted into the Imperial German Army at the age of 18. And as he writes about, you know, he's pretty much a normal young man. Again, the book is fiction, but it is based upon his experiences. So the character in the book, you know, is a normal young man. He's growing up, he's going to school, and all of a sudden he's cast into World War I. Remarque went through that in his own life. And in 1917, he was transferred to the Western Front. So he had to go through all this horrific warfare. World War I was, you know, really quite a amazing war. They thought it was going to end all wars, but of course it didn't. And the book is an anti-war novel. He wrote about the experiences of war. And being an anti-war novel, it was one that Germany banned, actually, in 1933, when the Nazis came to power. You can understand why. Adolf Hitler is rearming Germany at that time, trying to get them ready to go to war, build up their momentum, build up their spirit. And here's this book about the realities of war, about the horrors of World War I. And so at those infamous Nazi book burnings, All Quiet on the Western Front was one of those books that was burned. And Remarque ended up having to flee Germany. They didn't want him around and he had to get out of there because of what he wrote about his experiences in World War I. Now, World War I was a bloody and a terrible war, and the horrors of World War I included the brutality of trench warfare with its mud, its disease, psychological toll, the use of chemical weapons like mustard gas. They went through these devastating artillery bombardments, and the carnage that the soldiers saw, it led to what they called being shell-shocked. Today we call that PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, it was too much to even handle. And as I mentioned, World War I was supposed to be the war to end all wars. People that saw all that destruction said, surely we'll never have another war. Surely mankind would never put himself in that position again. But all it did, all World War I really did, was sow the seeds for the next war. And it's incredible to think that there are people that served and fought in World War I and in World War II. You know, you think about that type of a life to go through those wars. It's incredible. World War I, though, you know, it produced advancements in military development. There were a lot of advancements, including the tanks. And we have a clip about the development of the tanks. You can go ahead and play clip one.
The First World War, a dreadful historic milestone that resonates for its human cost and the brutalization of an entire generation of Europeans. The war to end all wars was fought using the latest technology. The industrial might of the most developed nations had been committed to the destruction of their enemies with unprecedented ferocity. When the war began, mechanization was already underway. London buses were used to transport the British Expeditionary Force. Tractors pulled the heavy guns, and the army was using aircraft in a military capacity. But World War I saw the birth of a machine that's now synonymous with warfare, the tank.
It was an amazing advancement, if you will, in warfare. And like we saw in the first clip, that movie reenactment, you know, just showed sort of the horror of people looking at a tank for the first time. In 1914, the war movement expected by most European generals was trench warfare. That's what it ended up being. You know, two armies dug into trenches and trying to fight back and forth and gain these trenches. And it really bogged down the war. It bogged down their efforts to advance. And there were machine guns reinforcing the rifle fire. So it was a disastrous affair. And so a solution presented itself. So mankind here, they see a problem. You know, one army wants to defeat the other army. How are they going to do it? Well, they decided to work on something that we know now as the tank. And the automobile already existed. And so they thought, well, if we take the automobile and we kind of retrofit it and change it out a bit, we can make it something that could be useful in the war effort. And that's exactly what they did. They added some serious guns to it. And lo and behold, you have a tank. And we saw some footage of that and tried to get sort of an idea of what that would be like to be a soldier fighting in the trenches, and all of a sudden you see this tank coming. And what are you going to do against the tank? You know, so those that had the tank and had that weaponry, they were at an advantage. There were other things invented in World War I or that were used for the war. Flamethrowers. That was another advancement, if you will. And that was used in the trench warfare because they could, one army could go up to another army's trench and they could just light it on fire with flamethrowers and burn the people in there. It's just a horrible, horrible thing. But yet you see this pattern of mankind seeing a problem, something they need to solve, using their minds, trying to figure it out, having inventions, and these inventions just become more and more deadly. And as is written in All Quiet on the Western Front, people just degenerated. They degenerated in the way they acted, the way they conducted themselves in war. And then, of course, also the technology becomes more destructive and more violent. Poison gas. That was another big advancement in World War I. The first successful use of chemical weapons occurred on April 22nd, 1915. And the Germans used that. They sprayed chlorine gas from large cylinders towards trenches held by French colonial troops. And so, you know, sometimes it would kill people pretty quickly, but a lot of times it took a while for people to die. It was a miserable death. It didn't turn out to be even all that effective in warfare, but it definitely scared people because if a person did ingest it, the horrible things that would happen would, you know, obviously be something they'd know about and be terrified of. The overall result of poison gas was a huge increase in misery. Mankind invents more weapons of war, we see more destruction, and we see more and more misery. Poison gas is something that terrified those people, and they'd put on their gas masks and try to survive. And some did, and of course, many did not. Tracer bullets, that's another thing that was invented in World War I. It's kind of interesting to go back and look at the history. You know, there's a lot of weaponry that came about during that time period. You know, the problem was they wanted to be able to fire more accurately at night. So the solution to it was tracer bullets. So you can see where the bullets are going. You could see where you were shooting. So they could have warfare that would extend even beyond the normal daylight hours. More and more destruction, more and more warfare, more and more developments. Aircraft carriers were used during World War I. Of course, they're used very much today. But they really got their start in World War I in a lot of ways. Something I found really interesting, especially for our time today, is that World War I saw the first use or attempted use of drones. And that seems a little shocking because drones are pretty new technology. We're still developing them. And yet, all the way back in World War I, the mind of man was thinking about if we could have pilotless drones, that would be very effective. And they tried it. Was not successful at that time. The first pilotless drone was developed for the U.S. Navy in 1916 and 1917, and they designed it as an uncrewed aerial bomb, especially a prototype cruise missile. And so it didn't work very well. That technology didn't really take off as they hoped it would. But now, of course, you see where we are with the development of drones. So you can see all of these seeds for future wars being sown during World War I. And in Daniel 12, in verse 4, Daniel recorded a prophecy that in our modern times today, knowledge would be increased. You know, people will run to and fro, knowledge will be increased. But it's not always good knowledge. It's not always knowledge that's beneficial. And there's a lot of knowledge that comes about, maybe to try to help in some ways, but a lot of times it ends up causing problems. Mr. Armstrong addressed this in a World Tomorrow program, and here's what he had to say. You can play clip 6.
World War I was supposed to be the war that would end all wars. It didn't end wars. Then came World War II, and it was labeled as the war to end all wars. But as a matter of fact, more than 140 wars have occurred since the end of World War II. This book, the Holy Bible, says that the way of peace they know not. Now, I have been often called an ambassador for world peace. And I speak to heads of nations all over the world, and I speak to them about their troubles, about all of the conditions in the world, and about world peace. But men do not know the way to world peace. There has to be a cause for everything that has happened. Here we live in a world of awesome progress. I say that so many, many times. The progress in this world, the advancement, especially of this 20th century, is awesome. And yet, at the same time, we are in a world of appalling evils. Evils that are almost beyond your imagination. Every kind of violence and trouble and human suffering. Why must people go on suffering? Why must we have so many troubles? And the troubles seem to be without solution. Men cannot find a way to solve the world troubles and to find world peace. So let's just be rational for a while. You know, a lot of people in higher education think that you can't be rational if you look at such a thing as the Bible. I want to tell you, the Holy Bible is the most rational, the most common sense book ever written on the face of this earth.
It's a great quote there from Mr. Armstrong and a great segment also, you know, where like he says, there's all this knowledge production that's happened and marvelous, you know, advancements. And certainly since his time back in the mid-80s when he was recording that, things have really taken off. You know, there's been a lot of technological advancements. And yet at the same time, as he points out, there's been more problems as well. And so we do have to be, as he says, rational and look at the Bible and look at God's word. You know, we can have a lot of knowledge, a lot of information, but if it's not based on the word of God, a lot of times it ends up causing problems. like what we've seen in World War I, like what we've seen in World War II, what we see today, what we see coming just ahead of us. Mr. Armstrong wrote an article in 1970, and the title of it is, "In a Single Decade, Knowledge Has Doubled and So Have Troubles. Why?" And as what I'm getting at today as we look at all of this is, you know, we see this progression of advancement, if you will, technologically. A lot of it spurred on by war. But where is it leading? You know, where is this knowledge getting us? And Mr. Armstrong wrote, "Knowledge production is supposed to be the way to cure all our evils. Given sufficient knowledge, the great minds have assured us we shall have the solution to all humanity's problems, ills, and evils." And that is something that we do hear a lot. You know, if we had enough knowledge, if we had enough understanding, we could solve everything, right? If we knew how to solve cancer, we wouldn't have any more problems. But like he writes, he says, why then this paradox? Why do we see new and increasing evils all about us worldwide, accelerating in almost exact proportion with the increase in knowledge? Why? It's a great question. It is something that we probably don't stop and think about enough. If you watch this program, you do probably think about it more. But people just sort of speed on with more knowledge, more technological advancement, without really stopping and thinking, well, is it solving problems or is it actually creating more problems? Sometimes it's pretty obvious, you know, if we see a tank or some weapon like that, we say, well, that's a problem. You know, it helps a nation win a war, but ultimately that's a problem. But there's a lot of knowledge production that we might think is okay, and yet does it solve any of the issues? Mr. Armstrong wrote, is there a relation between the two, between more knowledge and yet more problems? He says, just take a quick look at the facts. So he's writing in 1970 and looking at some of the things of that time. And he's not just talking about military advancement. As a matter of fact, he writes, recent agricultural knowledge has produced insecticides, artificial fertilizers, and chemicals. These sometimes resulted in suddenly increased crop production. The immediate result seemed beneficial. He says, it was once supposed that for the good of the soil, the land should lie idle every seventh year. That's a biblical principle. He says, but man gained the knowledge of how to avoid losing profits of that seventh year idleness. He learned how to produce great profits for himself the other 6 years besides. So he forced the land, he used these chemicals. And as he says, you know, what was the result of that? Well, lots of problems within the ecosystem, not to mention all the diseases we face today. A lot of them can be traced back to the foods we eat. You know, it seemed good for a while, maybe, but what are the results? Did it solve any problems? Or did it actually, you know, create more problems? A lot of times, more knowledge creates more problems. And obviously, we're not against knowledge. God's not against knowledge. God knows everything. God has all knowledge, but we have to have good knowledge, right knowledge. We don't want evil knowledge. Mr. Armstrong continued. He said, man's recent knowledge production has brought us millions of automobiles, giant factories producing labor-saving gadgets, thousands of new luxury items, and at the same time, the production of these inventions is polluting our air. You know, he was ahead of his time, the green movement, right? No, but he was just looking at the point that, okay, we have all these things we've invented. They do help maybe or make life a little more convenient, but what's the end result? You know, what's the end result of all the cars or all the production that we have? He writes, it is man's increased knowledge that is ultimately producing air pollution, water pollution, food pollution, garbage, and waste pollution. And he goes on and he just talks about other things that man has invented or worked on, more knowledge that they've gotten, but it hasn't solved the problems. And in fact, it's actually created problems we didn't even think about. And if you go further down the road to where we are today, well, we've got the internet, right? That's an awesome tool. We're using it even right now. It's a great tool, but there's some things about it that aren't so great. Some of the material is pretty bad on there. It's caused problems for people. You know, there's lots of technological advancements that do have some benefit, but they also have a lot of problems with them if they're not based on God's knowledge. Mr. Armstrong says, Man's recent knowledge production has brought us millions of automobiles and factories and so forth. I think I read that earlier. And he goes on to say, well, what's wrong with all this knowledge? What's wrong with it? Is it wrong to acquire or possess knowledge? He says, no, of course not. But there are two kinds of knowledge. There's the true and the false, right and wrong, good and evil. In the pursuit of knowledge, which man really goes after, in the pursuit of knowledge, man has used one source, and that's the scientific method of experimentation. You know, let's try it out and let's see what happens. And what often happens is, yeah, there's some benefit to some things, like, you know, some of the different inventions over the years have been helpful in certain ways, but then there's also a lot of problems that can come with it. And we see that very specifically when we look at warfare and the advancement of warfare. So World War I, what did it really do? It was supposed to be the war to end all wars, and all it really did was pave the way for World War II. World War II, of course, had a lot more advancements in warfare, most notably the atomic bomb. You can go ahead and play clip four.
Published in 1914, H.G. Wells's The World Set Free imagined a bomb of terrifying absolute power, a uranium-based hand grenade that would explode indefinitely. And the fantasy writer wasn't so far from reality. The beginnings of the atomic bomb came only 2.5 decades later. Atomic bombs have been used only twice in war, but the fear of utter destruction has loomed ever since, most recently with North Korea's nuclear tests. In 1938, a trio of nuclear physicists working in Berlin discovered nuclear fission. When an atom of radioactive material splits, it releases a powerful burst of explosive energy. The discovery came at a pivotal time, as World War II began the next year. 3 years later, in 1942, FDR approved the Manhattan Project, the codename for a group of US scientists and military officials working to develop an atomic bomb. They were hoping to get ahead of Germany, which was rumored to have been working on an atomic bomb since the 30s. And there, on July 16, 1945, the group launched the first successful atomic bomb, called Trinity Test. 10 days later, US President Harry Truman called for Japan's surrender, warning the country would face prompt and utter destruction otherwise. Japan refused, and on August 6th, the US dropped the uranium-based Little Boy on Hiroshima. 3 days later, the US dropped plutonium-based Fat Man on Nagasaki. An estimated 120,000 people were killed instantly. Tens of thousands more died later from radiation exposure. Japan surrendered on August 15, 1945. The nature of war had changed forever.
So obviously that's something that we know a lot about, a lot of history there, and quite an invention, right? And it gives you a little bit of background, even in that report from NBC News there about, you know, what they discovered and how they worked on it and what they did. And yet it caused so much destruction. And the report continues on. We didn't get all the clip of it, but you know, it just talks about where we are today, you know, where the weaponry has advanced so much. And there's, you know, all kinds of weaponry that's out there that, again, we're getting into a very serious time that Jesus Christ talked about. And you look at the advancement of warfare from World War I to World War II, and that takes us into Matthew 24. We see the Olivet prophecy here in Matthew 24, Jesus Christ warning his disciples, and of course, those of us down through the years, what to look, you know, at, what's going to be coming, what's ahead of us. And in verse 21 of Matthew 24, Christ said, "For then shall be great tribulation." This is time that's just coming shortly ahead of us. "For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." And when we stop and we think a little bit about the past wars and some of the horror of them, I think these words take on a lot more import, because this is a time that's going to be worse than anything that's been yet. And if you look at World War I and World War II, and you can even go back further than that into other wars, it's horrific the things that happened. It's just unbelievable the things that happened. And yet here Christ said, look, we're getting to the point where we're going to have this tribulation that's going to be worse than anything. And we can understand why. I mean, just look at the advancement in weaponry. We can see why it's going to be so bad. You know, there's been warfare over the years, of course, all throughout man's history. You know, there's just been war, but now we're getting to the point where the weaponry is so intense, the technology has advanced so far that we come to what really ends up being sort of the end of man's knowledge, which is the destruction of mankind. Like, we've learned enough to destroy ourselves. As horrible as that sounds, but that's what Christ says here in verse 22. He says, "And except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive," it should read in the Moffat translation. "But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened." You know, if Christ didn't return and he didn't stop mankind from the path that we're on, we would destroy ourselves completely. And we just don't hear a lot about this. I don't hear this talked about much anywhere other than, of course, like the Trumpet Daily and the Key of David and so forth. Who else is talking about this? This is Jesus Christ's own prophecy. He's the greatest prophet of all time. And he's talking about the end of man, you know, where our knowledge has brought us to. And how come we don't hear more about that? How come we don't stop and think about that? What's going on with the technology and the warfare? And it's interesting, you know, this obviously is talking about a time of war, right? But still, even if man were to just go on with our own knowledge without Christ intervening, we'd probably kill ourselves other ways, right? I mean, with famine, disease, all these other problems. You can see that in different parts of the world. It hasn't hit globally yet, but I mean, if you just continue this trail of, you know, man trying one thing and trying another thing and trying another thing, well, you'd end up destroying yourself in many ways. And we can see that progression when we just look at the history of man's warfare in modern times. You know, there was quite a few involved in World War II at a high level, like General Douglas MacArthur, who knew, like, we can't do this again. Like, we can't get back into another global war because the weaponry is too intense. So we've lived under this cloud of mutually assured destruction, right? Mad. But, you know, that's held for a few years, but we're at that point where we could certainly could destroy ourselves. There's so many weapons that are out there. I forget the number now, and I don't know if the numbers are even accurate, how many nuclear weapons are out there. But there are so many weapons. And Christ said, look, if he didn't return and stop it, mankind would destroy himself. World War I, as we looked at, it saw great advancements in warfare. Then World War II had even further advancements in warfare where mankind could now finally destroy himself. And now we're in a situation where Germany, who was, you know, heavily involved in those wars, started World War I and World War II. We're in a time where they are actually rearming for war right now. And we sort of all look at it, I guess, globally and say, oh, that's interesting. You know, some people think about it more than others. Even President Trump, you know, famously talked about that, like, well, I don't know that we should let you guys rearm, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. You know, but we can't play around with that type of thinking. There's all kinds of new and destructive technology that's out there. Mankind is making more and more and more weapons, and the technology's advancing further and further and further. Mr. Fleury talked about this on a recent Key of David program, where he talked about Germany rearming for World War III. He talks about some of the technology that they're getting into, and you can go ahead and play clip 5.
Germany is working on a Helsing unveiled new strike drone, HX2, and it's really very powerful, and it can assume into swarms controlled by single human operators. It can come at you with those drones in swarms. It's just a monumental warfare that is changing warfare very quickly and very deeply. Here's what Richard Palmer wrote. Drone swarms are potentially more destructive than nuclear bombs and even harder to defend against. What is this we're talking about? Monumental warfare. What is this kind of warfare? Drone swarms are potentially more destructive than nuclear bombs and even harder to defend against. Well, that's quite an improvement in warfare. Amazing that we can read something like that. Helsing may contribute to a frightening advance in modern warfare. That is from Germany. And the latest innovation deploys AI-driven drone swarms into depths beneath even the water. This is frightening warfare and makes the bombs, the nuclear bombs, seem even much more dangerous, but they may also be able to destroy certain nuclear bombs before they're even used in warfare.
So a really powerful program. If you haven't seen that one, go back and watch it. It's at the trumpet.com on Germany preparing for World War III. And the Trumpet magazine from, I think it was a few issues back, talked about that as well. And this is the cover of that. If you don't have it, go ahead and get a free subscription. And of course, these articles are available online too. You can get the PDF or just read them there if you want to. But the cover is Arming for World War III. And that's exactly what's happening. Germany is arming for World War III, and Mr. Fleury has a whole write-up in there about that, just talking about these things that are happening with drone warfare. We've seen drones be used powerfully in Ukraine, use them against Russia. Israel used them recently. You know, there's technology out there that's just moving at lightning speed. And where is it going? Well, you look at man's history, World War I to World War II, then you look at what Christ prophesied there in Matthew 24. These are frightening times that we're living in. We have to really understand that, you know, man is gearing up for more and more warfare, and Germany's gearing up for more and more warfare as well. And Mr. Fleury writes here in this Trumpet, he said, of course, nations are also racing to create countermeasures against all of these new technologies. So it's not like the other nations are just sitting idly by. Everyone's, you know, it's an arms race. Everyone wants to be able to have the best weaponry in case war breaks out. And of course, this has been mentioned by many people. You know, when has mankind ever made a weapon and not used it? You know, so there's AI-driven drone swarms. And like he said in that quote there, they can go underwater. You know, you think about that scene in the beginning of the show, the soldiers are in the trenches and here comes these tanks. And like, what is this? Well, where are you going to go to get away from a drone swarm? It can follow you underwater. You know, it can go to the air, obviously. It could go anywhere. It's horrifying to think about the technology and what mankind is doing. Now, in another way, I mean, it's amazing that mankind has a mind where it can, you know, look at certain things and say, well, we could develop technology, we could do different things. And yet, a lot of it's leading to just absolute warfare and destruction. So this is a great edition of the Trumpet. If you don't have this, please go ahead and get that. But, so this has been sort of, you know, I guess negative, right? But it is leading to something positive that I want to address here at the end. And first of all, it's extremely positive that Christ is going to return and stop it, right? The second coming of Jesus Christ. He did say in verse 22 there that for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. It's not going to end in the destruction of all flesh, thankfully, only because Christ is going to stop it. But then there's some very encouraging prophecy also about what comes after that. And it does tie back into the mind of man and the way that man has been created with this really inventive mind. It's going to be put to good uses. And we can see this if we look over at a prophecy in Micah 4. This prophecy is in a few other books of the Bible as well, but we'll read it here from Micah 4. This is talking about the time after Jesus Christ returns to this earth. Things are going to be changed. They're going to be much different, thankfully, than what they are today. Micah 4 and verse 1, it says, "But in the last days it shall come to pass that the mountain of the house of the Eternal shall be established in the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and people shall flow unto it." This is talking about God's government ruling this earth. Jesus Christ returning, the first fruit saints resurrected with him, ruling this earth with the government of God. And as Mr. Armstrong often wrote about, you have conflicts and you have wars because you have minds clashing with minds. So that's going to be stopped. There's going to be one law. It's going to be the law of God. There's going to be the government of God. And it's going to make sure that things are done correctly. And as it says here, it's going to be exalted. It's going to be the government. And people will flow unto it. They're going to want to come and learn how to live, how to make a success of their lives. They've seen enough war. They'll have just come out of so many problems. They'll have seen enough drone swarms. They'll have seen enough bombs. They'll have seen enough of the other things. And they're going to want to learn how to put God's knowledge to use and trust God to give them insight into how to live. And that's, of course, something man hasn't been willing to do to this point. Verse 2, it says, "And many nations shall come." So people are going to come, many nations, and say, "Come and let us go up to the mountain of the eternal." Let's go to the government of God and let's learn how to live our lives. They've done a great job, I guess you could say, of destroying themselves. Now they want to learn how to live as they should. So they're coming to the government of God. "Let us go up to the mountain of the eternal and to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways." See, that's what we need to learn. We've learned enough of our own ways. We need God to teach us of his ways. How do we conduct ourselves? What do we do when problems come up? How do we solve them? When we don't have enough knowledge, what knowledge do we go get to solve a problem? Well, instead of trying to figure it out themselves, mankind is finally going to come to God and say, "Would you teach me of your ways? I need to know how to fix this problem, and I'm looking to you for that answer and for that insight." And it says, "And he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For the law shall go forth of Zion, and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem." People are going to come to Jerusalem. They're going to come to the government of God, and they're going to want to learn how to live, how to solve the problems that they've run into, instead of trying to solve it their own ways. And then what I really want to get to here is verse 3. This is really an awesome scripture, something that we all, I think, know about quite well, even if people don't pay a whole lot of attention to the Bible. I think this is pretty well known. But just think about this as we read it, and think about it in relation to what we've talked about with World War I and World War II and the advancing technologies. Verse 3, it says, "And he shall judge among many people and rebuke strong nations afar off, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks." Mankind is not going to use their creative abilities anymore for warfare. That's a very famous statue. I think it's outside of the United Nations or one of those buildings, but that's a very famous image. It's a very famous statue. It's in a lot of different places where you see a man beating a sword into a plowshare. But that's what's going to happen. There's going to be a change in the way man uses technology. You know, you just stop and think, well, what could we do? What could we do if we used this really creative mind that God's given us, and he created us with it? You know, what could we do with it if we went to God for the foundational knowledge and said, you know, which direction do we go? What laws do we follow? And then we got busy working with each other and not fighting. You know, you just think about what kind of technology could be invented. I mean, it's astounding to think about. It really is, and it's worth thinking about it. They're going to beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up a sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. You know, when they went into World War I, so much money was spent on that war. World War II, obviously, so much more money was spent. Even today, without there being a world war at this current time, there's been skirmishes and there's been other things. How much money has been spent? It's amazing how much money is spent to fly a stealth bomber and to drop a payload somewhere. I mean, the amount of money, the amount of time, the amount of technology that mankind has put into warfare. And they would say, well, what do you want us to do? I mean, we've got to do something, right? We've got to defend ourselves. And people go about trying to do that. One nation's going to defend itself against the other nation, and so on and so forth. The technology increases, the weaponry, the power of it increases. We get to this Matthew 24 prophecy where Christ said, look, it's going to get so bad that you're going to destroy yourselves. That's what's going to happen. And that's what would happen if not for the return of Jesus Christ. But then there's this beautiful prophecy here in Micah 4 where we're going to use that creative ability that comes from God in the first place, but use it for right purposes. You know, there are a lot of problems in this earth when you think about the diseases, right? I mean, people are always talking about trying to cure cancer and so forth. That's going to be a wonderful thing. Now, of course, God will heal, as he promises to do, But still, we can get back to the laws of God. Well, what should we be eating? How should we be living? You know, the foods can be made correctly again, grown correctly again, without all the chemicals and everything else that'll be put in there. You just stop and think about what mankind is capable of. What mankind is capable of when he stops, you know, just using the scientific method of trying to figure it out for himself and really go back to the mountain of God and say, okay, tell me how to live. What do I do? And as it says there in verse 2, you know, God's going to teach people and they're going to walk in his ways. So it won't be just a matter of them getting the knowledge. They're going to then go forward and walk in that way. We have a great book on the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like, where Mr. Armstrong, you know, looks into this future world. That's what the Feast of Tabernacles is all about. You can see it there on your screen, that book. It's a great book, and he gets into looking at some of these prophecies and just talking about what this world's going to be like, how amazing it's going to be. And it's not just going to be, you know, the snap of a finger and then all of a sudden there we are, everything's perfect. It's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of productive effort. But when you look at what mankind has been capable of over the years, unfortunately, mostly used for negative things, you take all of that brain power, all of that inventive mind power, and it's directed by God and his government, it's going to be amazing to see what people can come up with. And it's going to be, of course, directed by God. You know, what should we do? They always talk about green energy, right? That's the dream, green energy. Well, how do we do that? You know, God has a way for those things to be done. Every time I drive through a big city, and I'm sure you can relate to this, I always look at the interstates and all the cars and everything, and I think there's got to be a better way, right? There's got to be a better way to do this than what we're trying to do now. And, you know, you get stuck in a traffic jam, and you get to it's kind of the bottleneck, and it's just because one lane closed off. And you think, why did we all have to wait because just one lane closed off? There's got to be a better way. And I know that people spend a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money trying to solve all these different problems, whatever they might be, but we don't ever really get there. You know, maybe one thing's improved, but then something else ends up being worse. This is the time, though, that's coming. We're finally, they're going to beat their swords into plowshares. No more tanks, no more bombs, no more AI drones or whatever else is out there, whatever else is coming. It's all going to be put to good use. You know, the minds that made the tank, they can probably come up with something really great for farming, some great tool. The minds that make the atomic bomb, they can probably really think of some great things to produce energy. Now, again, God will have to direct all of it. We're not just going to be left to our own thinking, thankfully. But we have this creative ability that God's put in us. And when we use it correctly, it's going to be amazing. You know, the minds that are making drones, what could they put their efforts into to make something else? All the knowledge directed by Jesus Christ, directed by the government of God after the return of Christ to this earth. So when we talk about the millennium and we talk about this wonderful world tomorrow, you know, some people could say, well, that seems like a fantasy. But when you think about just what man's been able to do to this point and have all of that turned in the right direction, you can see how you can really start to improve things in an amazing way. It's astounding what mankind can do. But unfortunately, much of it's gone the wrong direction. The reason is because, as it says in Isaiah 1:18, God wants us to come and reason with him. We need to come and reason with God. And when we reason with him and we look to him for knowledge and understanding and the right direction and things, then we really can get somewhere. I mean, it's amazing to think about what the mind of man can do when it's finally put to the right purposes and it's going in the right direction. And what it creates is this wonderful world tomorrow, this millennium vision that is prophesied all throughout the Bible. And so please get that book if you haven't read it, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It'll Be Like by Mr. Armstrong. It's free at thetrumpet.com. You can read it there if you'd like to, or you can request your own copy. And just really get your mind on this world to come, because when we look at the world today, we're just seeing a lot of problems. I mean, every day it seems like, and it's getting to be more and more, there's something in the news that's horrifying. You know, mass shootings, other problems like that, obviously advancements in warfare. every day we're saturated with those things. We need to have our minds on, certainly on the reality of the times and the prophecies, like Christ talked about, but we also need our minds on this wonderful world tomorrow and what it's going to be like. And really start to think about the reality of it, you know, how it will come about, how God will do it. We don't know all the answers to that, but we can certainly get a little bit of an insight when we think about what man's been able to do to this point, even though it's been going the wrong direction. When it's turned the right way, it's going to be incredible. Mr. Armstrong wrote a lot about this in that book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And he spoke often about that. He would go around and talk to different leaders of nations and give them insight into that future world to come, even though he spoke about it in ways that they could understand. Not everybody that he went to believed in the Bible. But he would go to them and he would speak about this coming government of God, this kingdom of God, and this wonderful world tomorrow that it would produce. And people loved that message. Now, they didn't always understand all of it, but they loved it, because who doesn't want a better world where there's no more war, where there's no more destruction? You know, I think about those people that died in World War I, or died in World War II, or any of these other skirmishes that are ongoing and will continue up into World War III. You know, when they are finally resurrected, and that'll be, of course, later in God's plan, but when they are, they're going to be ready to be taught, because they will have experienced life under man's system. They will have experienced life where Satan is the god of this world, as it says in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. They'll have experienced mankind corrupting himself and his mind and ability and degenerating and seeing the knowledge lead to wars. And they'll remember that, and they'll have been through it in many cases. And they're going to be ready to do what it says there in Isaiah 1 and verse 18 and really reason with God now and really do what it says there in Micah 4 and go up to the mountain of God and say, could you teach us now? You know, we experienced life back then, and we're ready to experience this wonderful world tomorrow. Of course, many will come along a little after that, but they'll still see the fruits and the benefits of it, and they're going to be able to live and experience the joy of a world created by God. And of course, that's pictured by the last great day. All these holy days are explained in pagan holidays or God's holy days, which Mr. Armstrong wrote about that as well. But back to Mr. Armstrong, he did speak a lot to other people around this earth about this wonderful world tomorrow. He tried to give them hope and give them inspiration. And a lot of that was recorded and put together in a behind the work film that was shown in the Worldwide Church of God. And I think it was 1985 in that time period. And a lot of emphasis was put on the end of man's age and this wonderful world to come, and mankind really beating their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, and nation not lifting up, you know, sword against nation, and not learning war anymore, but instead learning how to obey God. And so we'll finish today with a clip. This is from the 1985 Behind the Work film. And this is Mr. Armstrong talking about this wonderful world to come. You can go ahead and play clip 7.
Jesus Christ will establish his kingdom on the earth, which will lead the world into 1,000 years of peace. Leaders of nations will come to this kingdom, eager to be taught the way that leads to peace. They will come to a tranquil land, developing in happiness and prosperity, living in harmony with God and his laws. Many then will remember that in the last days of that past civilization, an ambassador of this kingdom came to them with the advance news of a peaceful world tomorrow.
And I'm here to announce to you tonight that God is going to let this world come crashing down, but it's going to be replaced with a far better world that'll be filled with love and with peace and joy and happiness and with greater production by far than anything we've dreamed of having yet, and where everybody will be well educated and rightly and properly educated. I feel the responsibility, and a voice has to cry out in this wilderness of religious confusion, this wilderness of a Babylon of ideas, and everybody having different ideas, and everybody against everybody else. Someone has to cry out with that message and announce what is going to happen, as certain as the sun is going to rise and set tomorrow. Now, I know you haven't heard anything said like this before, but I have been sent here by that eternal living Creator God, the God over all races and all people and all nations, to tell you the truth, which missionaries have failed to tell you, which religions have not known and have not been able to tell you, which the colleges and universities do not teach, which science doesn't even understand. But you have been told tonight.
So that's a very stirring clip. It's quite a long film, actually, about 2 hours. I think maybe it's a little more than that. But Mr. Armstrong went around and he really highlighted this world to come. And it was inspiring for people, even if, again, they didn't understand all of the prophecies or, you know, exactly what was going to happen there. He was just trying to give them some hope of the future. And unfortunately, many people have forgotten that, that did know it. You know, for those that did keep the Feast of Tabernacles, which is going on right now, and then maybe they fell away from it. You know, we need to make sure we're really understanding God's plan for mankind. And the Feast of Tabernacles is such a wonderful part of that because, again, it shows that this world's not going to end in the destruction of all mankind. It's going to get close. But there's this wonderful world to come. And sometimes when people hear some of the prophetic message on this program and on the Key of David, they get, you know, a little bit maybe negative and say, well, that's a pretty hard message. Well, it's what Christ prophesied is coming, Matthew 24. We looked at that. But that's just a part of it. There's this great, great plan beyond that. So it's always a hopeful message. And when you get the Trumpet Magazine and watch the Key of David and watch the Trumpet Daily Program, you get that full picture, you know, where, yeah, there are some things very seriously we need to think about. We need to think about Germany rearming. We need to talk about those things and see what's going on in this world and see the problems here in the United States and around the world and understand that there's a cause for those, but there's also a solution for them. And Micah 4 points that out. You know, people are going to go and really ask for God's direction in things. And God's knowledge will bring about this incredible world to come. So we have to keep the whole plan of God in mind, and it's a wonderful plan. The prophecy is a big part of it, of course, but a lot of that prophecy is super positive. This millennial world that people have longed for, and many people have wanted to see, and many people have really worked to try to produce, and yet typically it ends up in something like we talked about today, warfare. World War I, World War II, the continuation of technological advancements, but military advancements typically that end in destruction, or other advancements in society that don't quite solve the problems. When we look into God's vision and His plan and look at the Feast of Tabernacles, it gives us great hope. And again, Mr. Armstrong wrote about that in The Wonderful World Tomorrow, what it will be like. It's not a book of, you know, hopes or fantasies. It's based upon the Word of God. And when you get that book and you read through it, there's specific prophecies you can read. Micah 4 is talked about, you know, specific prophecies that you can really have hope in. And when you listen to, you know, sort of the rhetoric back and forth in the United States, it's very divisive. And as we go forward, it'll probably become more and more divisive. It's prophesied to be that way. We need some hope that we can have. And there's real legitimate hope. And again, it's in God's message. And you can read a lot about that in that wonderful book there on the screen, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. You can get your free copy at thetrumpet.com, or you can call the number on your screen and that'll be sent to you. And if you can't wait and you want to get to it right away, you can do that just by going to thetrumpet.com. Those books and many others are there, and you can read the PDF, download it, print it, or just read it on the screen and get some of that real hope that we all need. It's in God's Word, and it's certainly in His Holy Day plan, and it's a wonderful, wonderful plan for mankind. That's all the time we have for today here on the Trumpet Daily Program. I'm Dwight Falk. Thanks for stopping by today, and we'll see you next time.